It's 1:05. Let's go back on the record. We've completed the applicant's presentation. Can we have it quiet out in the other room out there, please? We're starting up again. Thank you. We're going to take the testimony of Mr. Ron, is it Shoup?
Shoup.
Next, and you've submitted three exhibits. One would be your written testimony, which we'll mark as exhibit 15, and then two maps, is that correct?
Two maps.
All right.
Your Honor, before this, I was going to say,
could we adjust?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
During the break, I asked on behalf of the PSC to enter as a late filed exhibit PSC document 14, which is the August 20th letter that was referenced in the questioning of Mr. Hafner, as a late filed exhibit in this matter.
Yes. Mr. Bender, do you have any response to that?
Your Honor, we don't have any objection to the late filed exhibit. We would request, however, that the applicant be allowed 5 business days after the receipt of the letter, and I think we can presume it'll probably be received tomorrow, to respond to the letter.
Okay, granted. That'll be marked as exhibit 14. It'll be a late filed exhibit, and the commission will consider it when it's received and give Mr. Bender 5 days to respond.
Thank you.
And do you want some time to respond if he responds?
Yes, I'd like 5 days.
All right.
For a response too, also, please.
Okay. So late filed exhibit 14 may be more than just the letter. It may be the responses also. All right. In the process of passing out your documentation, Mr. Shoup, so just a second here. And I'm marking your written testimony as exhibit 15, and the maps are you going to address?
The waterfowl density map is the second or the first map.
I'm sorry, which?
The waterfowl density, the colored map here, that one.
Okay. That'll be the first one?
Correct.
Okay, that'll be exhibit 16 then. And then the other one will be exhibit 17. I need to swear you in. Mr. Shoup, did you hear the admonition I gave earlier in regard to perjury?
I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Why don't you state your name, please, for the record, and your address, and tell us what you want to tell us.
All righty. My name is Ron Shoup. My address is 7921 Country Brook Road, Bismarck, North Dakota. And I'm here. I am a retired wildlife biologist here today representing the North Dakota chapter of the Wildlife Society. The North Dakota chapter of the Wildlife Society, the chapter, is generally supportive of the wind industry as a renewable source of energy that can be produced locally. The chapter is concerned, however, about the impacts that wind facilities placed in grasslands, particularly extensive tracts of native prairie, have on ecosystem health and wildlife. In a 2007 report, Environmental Impacts of Wind Energy Projects by the National Research Council to the U.S. Congress, the Council recognized that the construction and operation of wind energy facilities directly influence the ecosystem structure. These influences include direct disturbance, removal of vegetation, soil compaction and erosion, and changes in hydrologic features. Wildlife is impacted directly through mortality or indirectly through alteration of habitat and behavioral avoidance. Furthermore, research conducted in various parts of the United States indicates small-scale displacement of songbirds. Specifically, preliminary research results conducted in North Dakota and South Dakota by the U.S. Geological Survey indicate displacement of some species of grassland songbirds by the wind facilities. The chapter is particularly concerned with the impact to wildlife of wind facilities placed on the Missouri Coteau, such as the CPV Ashley Wind Project. The Missouri Coteau contains large expanses of unfragmented grasslands intermixed with millions of wetlands and is a vital breeding area for many grassland and wetland nesting birds. In addition, it is a hunter's paradise and a prime area for ecotourism potential. The Missouri Coteau is in the middle of the Central Flyway, a migratory corridor used by millions of migrating waterfowl and other migratory birds during the spring and fall. It is also an endangered ecosystem, even more so than tropical rainforest. only about 30% of mixed grass prairie remains intact in North America. The Missouri Coteau is critically important for wildlife in North Dakota, as well as to hunters, outdoor enthusiasts, and operators of ecotourism industry that values these irreplaceable resources. The importance of tourism to the state's economy is underscored by the fact that the tourism industry ranks second in its contribution to the state's economic base. Tourism generated $3.96 billion in 2008. Hunting contributes about $365 million annually to the state's tourism industry. The CPV Ashley Wind Project would be located in an area of largely intact native prairie with high wetland density. Because of the unfragmented nature of the area within which the CPV Ashley Wind Project would be located, the chapter is concerned about the impact of the CPV Ashley Wind Project to wildlife and the native prairie ecosystem. In addition to my comments, the chapter is submitting for the record two maps. The first shows waterfowl nesting densities in the project area. Densities exceeding 80 to 100 pairs per square mile are significant habitat for waterfowl and other groundland nesting birds. The second map shows the various types of habitat in the area, especially grasslands. Those two maps are shown as my exhibits 2 and 3. The chapter also has concerns about the larger landscape in which the CPV Ashley project is embedded. That area of the Missouri Coteau is experiencing rapid growth by the wind industry. The operational NextEra Energy's Calm Edgley Wind Center and Acciona Energy's Tatanka project or wind facility are near the CPV Ashley project. Future projects nearby include the next growth phases for the NextEra and Tatanka wind resource areas, and individual projects under development by NXO, BP Alternative Energy, and Just Wind Wind Farm Development. Many plant and animal species are sensitive to anthropogenic disturbance, be it increased human presence on the landscape or the introduction of a non-native plant into the environment. These types of influences seldom work independently on wildlife. The combination of new roads, increased vehicular traffic, increased human presence, alteration of wetlands, introduction of non-native plants, construction of very large structures on the landscape, and other anthropogenic disturbances are termed cumulative impacts. The cumulative impacts of wind development and other anthropogenic pressures on wildlife undoubtedly will be negative. Whereas one wind facility may have minimal discernible negative influence on wildlife, the accumulation of numerous wind facilities built in the same area may begin to break down species thresholds of tolerance to disturbance. The several small projects in the same vicinity could in time become in essence one wind facility, but because of current state regulations, the facility's biological effects could accumulate without the benefit of regulatory review. The chapter strongly believes that each new wind facility should be considered in the context of other existing and planned projects in the region. This consideration of cumulative impacts should include all other anthropogenic impacts in the area, including such things as additional transmission lines, roads, and other types of infrastructure that may or may not be unrelated to wind facilities. Whether or not the aforementioned projects will have minimal impact on the environment cannot be ascertained without a cumulative impact analysis. The chapter is most supportive of wind facilities that are placed in habitats of limited conservation value to wildlife, such as cropland in predominantly agricultural landscapes. In areas where turbine placement on grassland is unavoidable, the chapter urges mitigation in ratios exceeding 1:1. That is to say, for every acre of grassland destroyed, more than an acre should be restored or protected. Native prairie should receive the highest mitigation ratio, followed by planted grasslands. The chapter realized that there is no established system in North Dakota for this type of mitigation for wind facilities, but also realizes that Basin Electric Power and BP Alternative Energy and Clipper Wind Power Development for a jointly owned South Dakota project have already committed to voluntary conservation measures. The chapter applauds these efforts. The chapter urges wind developers to contact state and federal natural resource agencies early in the planning process to discuss the entire scope of a wind resource area and thus ultimate impact footprint, regardless of current regulations. If contacted early, agencies and wind developers can address concerns over potential cumulative impacts as well as ways to avoid or minimize them. Another benefit of early contact with the state and federal agencies, as well as other concerned entities, is the opportunity to coordinate to study the potential impacts of wind facilities on wildlife. There are numerous unanswered questions about the impacts of wind facilities on wildlife. Whereas many wind developers conduct pre-operational baseline surveys and sometimes post-operational monitoring surveys, these surveys are not always relevant to a particular region. Money might be better spent on surveys of a different nature. For example, in North Dakota, very little is known about rates of bird and bat mortality or the impacts of turbines on prairie grouse. To our knowledge, very little research is being conducted in the state on these issues. Data from such research would help biologists make better informed decisions about the impact of wind facilities on wildlife. Some wind developers are beginning to write avian and bat protection plans for their facilities. The chapter supports the development of such plans, especially if these plans are written in coordination with state and federal natural resource agencies, address what pre- and post-operational monitoring will be conducted, and how the resulting data will be used and shared, and explains how potential impacts, migratory and resident birds and bats, will be avoided, mitigated, or minimized. That's my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Shoup. I've marked your written testimony, which you obviously given orally, as Exhibit 15 as a memorialization, I guess, of your of your oral testimony. And then you've offered Exhibit 16 and 17 also, the two colored maps. Mr. Bender, any objection to either of those exhibits, or any of those exhibits, I guess I should say?
No objection to
the
exhibits.
Mr. Armstrong?
No objection.
All right. I'll admit Exhibits 15, 16, and 17. Any questions of Mr. Shoup, Mr. Bender?
Maybe a question to Mr. Shoup. As I understand your testimony, you're making certain recommendations to the commission, but you understand that there are no statutory obligations for the commission to consider these recommendations.
That's
correct. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so basically what you're doing is you're encouraging the applicant and other applicants for wind farms to take into consideration your remarks. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's all the questions I have.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Mr. Armstrong, please.
No questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lean. Thank you, Commissioner Clark, please.
I don't have any questions, but just thanks, Ron, for again being here and testifying. I do appreciate your comments, and struck by one of the chapters or paragraphs in your testimony, which highlights, I think, the issue that both Kevin and Brian had been getting at earlier with regard to the value of cropland versus native grassland and this statutory obligation that we're under, where for whatever reason, you know, throughout the years in North Dakota, both in statute and in rules, agricultural cropland has had the highest value placed on it under the law. And so when we get into situations where we talk about preserving native prairie for other reasons and potentially, you know, mitigating prairie grasses that are taken out by taking cropland out of production, it creates an interesting scenario for the commission. But I think that the issue that you raise and what my fellow commissioners have talked about does deserve a review by perhaps the legislature and us with regard to how we structure these longstanding laws that we've had that place value on something that may be in, you know, the future we might need to place value on other things. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
Well, I guess I would just say Ron, I don't have any questions either except to express my appreciation for your continued participation in this formal way at these hearings and really encourage the discussion with the policymakers. At the same time, I grieve a little bit because I worry we'll wake up one day. You know, we can turn prairie into cropland, but it's pretty tough to do the opposite, and we're not going to. I mean,
exactly.
We don't do it that way. And so at the same time, I have a hard time reconciling that with my strong conviction that a person's property is theirs. And I guess that's why this isn't such an easy job sometimes, but appreciate this very, very much, and hope we can. And by the way, also, and I appreciate Mr. Bender's clarification, because one of the things that makes all of this work better are good corporate citizens that share, you know, our concern for the same thing. So I don't cast any judgment on anybody, except that I appreciate that you're there to make us all more mindful of some of these things. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Yeah, thank you, Ron, for your testimony. I want to follow up a few things, I guess. The judge said it in the beginning there about any adverse effects. So I do deem this as something that we could say no on if we wanted to. If we deem this as an adverse effect by going at this kind of habitat, I think that's well within our jurisdiction to do. So I wouldn't dismiss that so easy to say we can't do it. But I would also say that there's that balance of personal property rights and what the current law is. But I will say is a lot of these wind hearings, we don't have a NEPA jurisdiction. So this one you do. So it would appear to me that what you told us would be best suited, I'm sure you've already thought of that, in following in your NEPA comments and let that work itself out. And that's probably where I was going with some of my mitigation questions, because there'll be some decision maker at the federal level that will determine how this is going to all play out. But what we need to have is input. And I do have a direct question for you, is that had you talked to the company prior to today, did they know your concerns?
No, they do not.
See, because that's where I'll give you a hard time, Ron, is that, you know, the because I think that everyone here tries to work together, and the sooner that we hook these people together, and I don't know what we talked before, you and I, in different settings about, you know, what's the best way to let the public know when to make comments, because it's nice if we get the comments for the companies to work with before today. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when did you actually become aware of this project?
When the Public Service Commission published their notice for the hearing.
So that's the first time that you get it, which was probably
Correct.
2 months ago?
Correct.
Okay, so in that period of time, that would have been, I guess, the opportunity to meet with those folks. But I would encourage the company that I know is listening there that, you know, you know what people to talk to in the state before you develop your projects, and this would probably be somebody you want to talk to as time goes on. Other folks that have had concerns about turbines at different hearings have come in with a recommendation that turbine X is the one that's causing the problems. I know that you've testified in different hearings that you said this is a good project and you had no concerns. But of this project, I mean, is there a certain part of it that poses more concern to you than others?
I think if you refer to the waterfowl nesting density map, those areas that exceed 80 to 100 nesting pairs per square mile represent significant grassland resources.
So if we'd overlay this to their map, those through the turbines that
Right.
you'd be most concerned about.
Correct.
So that's your threshold, if you will, the 80 to 100, the
Correct.
Rest?
What
is the biggest factor of wildlife production?
Let me understand exactly what you were
saying. When you look at wildlife production, I mean, it's a setup question. I shouldn't phrase it that way. It's my understanding that the biggest factor to wildlife production is water. And so we're in a wet cycle. The waterfowl just produced, no problem. When you're in a dry cycle, you don't have any waterfowl. So my bias would be that the wind turbines intuitively wouldn't be as big a factor as the water availability. What would your thoughts be to that statement?
It you have to put it more in the context of what species you're talking about, or group of species.
Okay.
For example, the native prairie dependent grassland songbirds are very dependent on an open relief. They view even such things as shelter belts as foreign to their environment. And so where we're seeing species that are in decline, such as Sprague's pipit or Baird's sparrow, it's generally due to loss of large expanses of native prairie. And wind towers, just like shelter belts, represent something foreign to their territory.
Okay, so I'm thinking more of ducks and geese, where you're talking
Correct.
More about different types.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Ron, for your testimony.
Thank you, Commissioner Call. Commissioner Clark, please.
One quick question. Can you clarify for me, Ron, what's the difference between undisturbed grassland and native grassland?
Just what I think, I know.
Okay.
The undisturbed areas are most likely to be protected areas, such as waterfowl production areas like that.
Okay. And native grassland is just rangeland
right.
that's
never been broken.
Tilled up. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Any further questions of Mr. Shoup? Well, thank you, Mr. Shoup.
Thank you.
All right. Maureen Delzer, please. Ms. Delzer, did you hear the admonition I gave earlier in regard to perjury?
I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name, your address, and if you represent anybody, and tell us what you want to tell us, please.
My name is Maureen Lee Delzer, D-E-L-Z-E-R. I am Ashley Economic Developer, P.O. Box 97, Ashley, North Dakota, 58413.
Thank you. Please continue.
Competitive Power Ventures has a very good reputation as being a community-minded and proactive for the communities that they are involved in. I have spoken to other communities and where they have built wind projects and have heard about how absolutely wonderful they are and professional they are. The economic benefit to Ashley is huge. During the construction phase, we will see a large boost to our local economy as local business sales increase, and the increase to sales tax revenue thus created will benefit the local government and schools. We will see 50 to 80 construction jobs created, which workers that I am told 80% of those workers will come from local communities in the surrounding area. Once the wind farm has been completed, we will see 10 to 16 full-time employees to operate and oversee the wind farm that would most likely be recruited regionally. Those jobs are very important to this community. This community has been on the downside for many years, and we need a boost and a primary employment. Our tax benefits will see approximately $1 million per year with $300,000 allocated to schools. This is a great opportunity to move Ashley forward, and it will benefit business, the businesses in town, landowners, and the citizens of Ashley. CPV has shown great support and really gives back to our community. Already in Ashley, they have sponsored the Ashley Rodeo Club for 3 years, the Tri-County Fair, the Ashley 125th celebration that will be held in 2013, and will be funding the removal of Dutch Elm disease trees from the McIntosh County Heritage Center, and also the other upcoming projects that may need attention with their contributions in the future. This is a win-win situation for landowners leasing their land, county's tax base, and renewable energy efforts in the region.
Thank you, Ms. Delzer. And understand again, Ashley Economic Development is the organization with?
Yes.
And what was your title with that?
I'm the economic developer for the city of Ashley.
Economic developer for the city of Ashley. Thank
Correct.
You. Mr. Bender, any questions of Ms. Delzer?
No questions.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong?
No questions.
Thank you. Mr. Lean? Thank you. Commissioner Clark, please.
No, Marine, but thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Kramer.
Maybe just one, Ms. Delzer, thank you for your testimony. Very well done.
Thank you.
You know, you heard Mr. Shoup talk about ecotourism and the importance of tourism and hunting and whatnot to the state's economy. Has your group done much with regard to promotion of ecotourism and what role these fantastic maybe native prairies play in that, and whether or not, while this project has its economic values as well, that there could be some deterioration of that if a project like this goes forward?
I really don't feel that there would be much deterioration in tourism. I think that would actually boost, as people would want to come to see our wind farms. We have plenty of hunters that come here that have bought homes. And by creating these jobs for people to actually come and live in Ashley and have their children go to our school is a benefit, I feel, that is something we need. You know, this is a community that is seeing a downturn in its population as it's growing older and the children are going off to college and never coming back, and we need something that brings people back to our community to keep it alive.
All right, thank you. Nothing further.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Cock, please.
Just thank you for your testimony. Maybe you heard me ask the question about, you know, the kind of skill sets that the workers here would need, the 10 to 16. Have you gone out and maybe did a little canvassing of some local people to see if they maybe have that skill set or could get that skill set to maybe apply for these jobs? I mean, if that's what we're trying to get to, we should be
right.
leaning
right.
forward into that as a community, I would think.
I feel that, you know, like Mr. Hafner had said, that, you know, maybe tech school, that would bring some of our kids coming back. You know, they could go to a tech school, come back, and raise their families here. Also, he did say, you know, hiring locally for some administrative positions and things like that. And then bringing in new people with families and whatnot. We saw with Tatanka Farm, you know, people have moved to Ashley. And uneducated as far as wind farms go, but got that education and have stayed here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Cullen. Any further questions of Ms. Delzer? Thank you very much, Ms. Delzer.
Thank you.
All right, I'm not sure if there was any other testimony. There was a couple that put down, some people that put down not sure or perhaps. I think Clyde Wetzel. Was Clyde Wetzel going to present testimony? Here he comes. Okay.
Do we have no further information for this?
Okay.
Thank you.
And then David Bullinger? Was David Bullinger? Okay. Please sit down. And Mr. Bullinger, did you hear the admonition I gave earlier in regard to perjury?
Yes, I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. And just give us your name and your address, please, and tell us what you want to tell us.
My name is David Allen Bollinger. My address is 8630 54th Avenue Southeast, Lair, North Dakota, 58460. I'm a landowner and resident of the county. Some of the land that I own is in the southeast corner of the project. I will not be receiving a turbine, so I guess I'm here to speak in favor of those that will be. The reasons I support the project are because some of these marinas already spoken of, but we have an increased tax revenue. We'll have increased income for the landowners. There'll be increased business in local towns, both during building and running the wind farm. There'll be 10 to 16 permanent, good-paying jobs to run the wind farm. Now, what exactly will this mean? For example, our Ashley Super Value will be selling more certified Angus beef instead of just hamburger. There'll also be an increase of rental business, such as Ford, John Deere, Arctic Cat, to work on the project. We'll also have increased tourism to view the wind farm and also to visit the construction workers. There'll also be increased housing sales and rentals, which is good for the economy. I'm also a member of the Mackinac County Wind Energy Committee. We set out to educate the landowners about land leases and fairness in payments where everyone is equal. That has been, as our experience has been met by CPV. As a personal front experience, I've worked with John first through my dad owning property and now transferring the property lease to me. There were no hassles involved. John has always been available through the phone calls to answer questions. I see wind power as being very beneficial to our country and our environment, being a zero emission source of power. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bollinger. Mr. Bender, any questions, Mr. No Bollinger?
Questions.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong, please.
No questions.
Mr. Lean. Thank you. Commissioner Clark, please.
Just one, and thank you for testifying. The Mackintosh County Wind Energy Committee, could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. We were set up as a group of people through entities like one from each city, mm-hmm. Economic development and stuff. Our intent was to try to learn as much as we could about different wind energy companies and try to get out information to the farmers. If they'd ask us, you know, we could tell them, like, this is a good company, this one's maybe not so good, and which ones will treat us fairly, and that was our intent, and I think we
just provide as much information to landowners as they can, so when someone comes knocking on their door, they know what questions to ask, and so on and so forth. It's a great idea, by the way. It's very proactive, and it's something that I think probably a lot of counties and communities around the state could learn from as far as trying to get as much information into landowners' hands, because I know it's one of the questions we get a lot, and of course the commission, because we're regulators, can't really be in the middle of private negotiations between landowners and companies, but to the degree that you've got a committee like that that's out there getting that information out, that's great, so I applaud you for that.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
No questions, just thank you very much for your thoughtful testimony.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk, please.
It's just also thank you for your testimony. And just maybe the flip side, that we hear so much good about the energy industry in the state, but in the western part of the state, we're hearing some negatives, and we're working through that as a state. But is there a common thread of your biggest area of concern as we continue to develop these resources in the state, that the one thing that maybe the state should be looking at policy-wise, or that we could do different to make things easier for you? And maybe there isn't. Some good insight that I wouldn't have access to.
I guess I wouldn't know. The only thing that I've realized by listening through the news and stuff is about the problem with housing and stuff.
Okay. Okay.
If there was some way to help that out, alleviate it. I mean, like, last I heard was setting up tents in a park in Williston. You know, that's getting pretty drastic.
But you're situated pretty well here in town to handle the increasing workers for what we have to do here.
I would say.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Commissioner Kong. Any further questions of Mr. Bollinger? None? Thank you very much. All right. We have a couple other possibles. Eric Kalpinski. I don't know if that's the right pronunciation, but is Eric wishing to testify? I can't see out there.
Not today.
Not today. Right. And then the other would be Lyle Fay. F-E-Y? Fay? I'm sorry. Fay.
No? Okay.
No? I think that's it. Anyone else that maybe changed their mind wishing to present testimony to the commission at this time? Do you see anybody out there? No.
All sitting on their hands.
Okay. Again, thank you very much, you public participants. Very much appreciated. As I said at the beginning or early on, Mr. Bender, I'd ask you if you wanted to present anything further after we had the public testimony.
More questions before we wrap this up. That'd be possible?
Certainly, we can recall. Would we call her at this time, Erica Roberts, please?
Just after the break, and I wanted to ask her a couple follow-ups.
Okay. Just need to remind you, you're still considered to be under oath.
Yes.
Commissioner Kalk, please.
Could you just walk me through again how this NEPA timeline is going to work out? The due dates and what you think might happen from this point forward?
Sure. The general schedule for NEPA as it is right now is that the scoping process was completed for the environmental assessment.
Okay.
The draft environmental assessment report is currently in production with TVA, and they hope to have it submitted to the public in September as a document available for review and comment.
And how long is that comment period for? Is it like 30 or 60 days?
TVA will set the time frame. They have NEPA guidelines. I, at the moment, can't recall if it's 45 or 60. Days for the public review, but I can find that out for you.
And then after the public review, I'm just trying to get a time frame when there might be a record of decision. Our order is not contingent on this by any means, but I'm just trying to figure out what time frame we're looking at.
Right. Following that and producing the final environmental assessment, which would incorporate the public's comments and address them and the ones that were deemed relevant, then a finding of no significant impact could occur, and we're looking at that being later at the end of this year.
So that seems a bit robust. If the comment period is September, if a 60-day comment period, that's well, I guess who knows. So well, you're hoping for the end of the year, I guess, to have this thing final, if you will.
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions of Ms. Roberts? No? Thank you. Mr. Bender, any other evidence to present?
No further witnesses.
All right. Then all that remains is to conclude by wrapping this up either by oral argument or submission of a brief. Usually the commission wants proposed findings of facts, conclusions of law and order. Did you wish to make a closing statement, Mr. Bender?
I don't think that's necessary, Your Honor. We will submit to the commission staff the proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law and order.
Can you give us a timeline for that?
Well, I suspect we'll have to wait until the late filed exhibits are due, but I would say within the next 30 days.
All right. Anything else to bring to the attention of the commission before we close this hearing? Understanding that there's those four late filed exhibits, and then we'll have that interchange between Mr. Armstrong and you in regard to Exhibit 14, I believe, late filed Exhibit 14.
I have nothing further.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Clark, closing comments, please.
Just thank you all for being here. Everyone who attended, but especially those who testified. Thanks to the applicant, very good witnesses and very good testimony was given, so I certainly appreciate that. And now to get down to brass tacks. Once the hearing record is closed, you can't talk to me about the application. You can talk to me about the best place to get Coogan in town. So if you catch me out in the hall, I'd certainly appreciate that. And by the way, this commission has a record of Coogan in Ashley. Some of you may remember a few years ago We had one of our Zap the Gap meetings down here where we talk about cell phone issues, and I note that both of my cell phones have like four bars right now, so something positive must have come out of that. But we had a competition between us and the South Dakota Commission, and we went down to Eureka, and we had a cell phone meeting there, and we had Coogan there, and then we came up here to Ashley, and we had a cell phone meeting here, and we had Coogan here. And then we took a vote, and it ended up a 3-3 tie. And we couldn't convince a single South Dakota commissioner to vote for Ashley Coogan, even though we all know in our hearts it was better. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
I would note, however, that at that time we had about the same number of megawatts of installed wind capacity as South Dakota, and since then we have three times as much as them, which should tell you something as well. First of all, thank you to everybody for your attendance to the company for a very good filing, very good hearing, and very good testimony. Appreciate that very much, because it's not always the case. There are varying degrees of good, and this was excellent. This is, as I said earlier, a little bit unusual for us. Sometimes these things are somewhat routine. This one is not, for the various reasons that I pointed to earlier. But one of the things that strikes me as we wrap up is that's somewhat unusual is the construction timeline. Generally speaking, we are under a very tight and urgent timeline. Usually it's brought on by some federal issue, usually a production tax credit that's about to expire, or in the year like this, the ERA 30%, but you're not under those timelines. It's intriguing that we have this opportunity to hear a case so far in advance of your own plan. Now, we've cited some. The very first one we cited, it didn't get built for 5 years, but it wasn't on purpose, you know. So this one is somewhat unusual in that regard, and frankly, I appreciate the breathing room, and I know Jerry does, and as does our legal staff. So just with that, thank you all very much for a very good day.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Cock, please.
Just echo the same sentiments. Thanks for coming out today. Thank you for the excellent testimony. And, you know, my opening comments, I talked about how North Dakota is doing so well, and it's this balanced approach. I mean, we go around and you talk about the coal. There's some that are for it, some that are against it. You talk about wind. There's pros and cons. Natural gas, there's pros and cons. But, you know, this commission, our job is to make sure that we meet an energy demand and try to preserve the way of life we have in North Dakota. So that's exactly why we have these hearings. I really appreciate everyone coming out. And I don't, our own timeline here, we'll probably move this down the road pretty quick within the next couple of months. And I do appreciate all of you getting this to us in a time that we can do the right due diligence, but then get this thing built the right way. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, commissioners. For the record, it is 1:45, and this hearing is closed.